Good morning. May it please the court. Matthew Lango on behalf of the defendant appellant Dennis Thompson. The only issue, Your Honors, before this court on appeal is the district court's denial of the defendant's motion to suppress statements. And really there are two statements at issue here. The first takes place on the evening of September 22, 2004 in the defendant's apartment in Rockford, Illinois. With respect to the first statement, the district court clearly erred in finding that the defendant was not in custody at the time that he gave the statement. So much so, in fact, that the district court, based on the...
Don't I recall it? They left and he walked out?
He was told when the agents initially left...
He said they told him not to leave.
Correct.
And they didn't say
later,
they told him not to leave.
Later, when he walked out,
he approached one of the agents. But the question is the conversation at the time.
The only indication
I can think that he has that he was in custody was that his statement, they told him not to leave, and they said they didn't say any such thing. They just left. Now, the fact they kept him under surveillance is a different problem altogether.
Right. I believe one of the agents, Agent Lee, testified that he may or may not have told the defendant not to leave, that he can't quite remember. He said something like, well, if you can't go far, or something like that. But I think...
Don't we wind up with a credibility question in the judge?
As to that issue of...
Custodial interrogation.
Well, as to the issue of whether or not he was told to leave. Well,
take the total facts. If you're in your own home, you invite somebody into the home, you sit around discussing, and they leave, and don't take you with them.
Well,
the superficial appearance is simply that of an interrogation without custodial interrogation, so Miranda isn't necessary, isn't even required.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. Consider first one of the main topics of conversation that the district court acknowledges in her order, where in the time leading up to the defendant's statement, the agents are discussing with him the possibility of his getting out on bond.
Right.
If he cooperates, maybe you can get out on bond
and take care of your affairs.
I mean, if the defendant weren't in custody,
in the event you are arrested, you might be able to get out on bond.
Well, it didn't seem to be that much of a hypothetical. I mean, it seems to me that it wasn't. If the defendant weren't in custody, they would have no reason to be discussing bond.
You think there's no credibility question here at all? You have to, if you accept the position, the credibility
Correct.
Findings of the court, you still wind up with the same position that you've got.
Yes.
Well, okay, well, at least we got that set to one side. We can move from there.
I mean, I would add to the, in terms of this totality of the circumstances analysis, I would add to that, consider, if you will, the size of the defendant's apartment. As Agent Ely testified at hearing, the apartment was no larger than the jury box in the district courtroom downstairs, and it contained a couch, chairs, television,
desk. So the
size
of the place of interrogation determines whether it's custodial interrogation?
In part, yes. Where... Mm-hmm. The defendant.
So you're
and
better off having a small apartment than you are having a big one if you're going to get into that involved.
For the purposes of interrogation, if you're hoping to find a custodial, yes. I mean, it seems clear to me in the agent's description of this interrogation that they're right on top of each other for nearly 4 hours. Consider also the fact that the district court acknowledged in her opinion there's no rear exit to the defendant's apartment. I mean, he would have had to effectively...
But they walked out the front door and left him in his apartment with the door available to him. And he changed into his sweaties and went outdoors.
That's true. And when he did, he was arrested.
Well, it didn't. If he thought he was arrested or if he had been arrested, he wouldn't have left him. Wouldn't be able to leave at all.
Well, he... thought he was arrested, and as
not that his subjective decision on the subject has anything to do with whether in fact he was arrested or in custody.
Right.
The question is that at this stage of the game he stuck his neck out. I don't think he thinks he can take he's home free forever. He's just not arrested, that's all.
Respectfully, I would disagree in that.
You're entitled to disagree with me.
Well, thank you.
Momentarily.
I think any reasonable person in the defendant's position here would believe that he or she was in custody, and I think that reasonable belief on the part of the defendant manifested itself as he walked out and immediately approached one of the agents. And,
if he was so reasonably believed he couldn't go out, why did he put on his sweats and walk out?
I mean, he had to wear something.
No. He put on changed clothes, put on his sweats, and went outside. Why did he say he did that? What was he going to do?
He was hoping to be allowed to go for a run.
Now, if he's going to go out and thinks he can walk out and go for a run, do you think he thinks he's in custody?
I do.
Well, you have a different idea of custody than I have. If I think I'm in custody, I don't think I can walk out and go for a run. First of all, I wouldn't go for a run, but that's neither here nor there.
All right.
but back up. I don't see how you can say that his objective or subjective belief, our objective, either one, would indicate that he thought he was in custody if he thought he could put on his sweats and go for a run. That is not the manifestation of being in custody.
Well, but I would draw the court's attention, though, back to the point in time in which he's actually being interrogated by the agents when...
But to be interrogated by the agents and invoke the Miranda problem, you have to be in custody. And that is the issue with this case, is whether or not he was in custody during the interrogation. And the answer is, obviously, it seems to me, no. And he didn't believe it either, because he wouldn't have put on his sweats to go for a quick hike.
Well, with respect to the defendant's belief...
I understand what you're saying.
I would just draw one other... point to the court's attention, which is that, as the district court noted in her opinion, the defendant stated that he did not feel free to get up and move about the apartment while the agents were there.
Well, as
questioning
near as you
him.
Described it, he couldn't have gotten up and walked around the apartment anyway because he'd have bumped into him.
But well, that's true. But, the defendant reasonably felt that he had to ask for and get the agent's permission in order to get up, to get a drink of water, to use the restroom. And even then, when he did, he was followed around the apartment by the agents. He testified that the agents placed their hands on their hip as though they were putting their hands on their guns. So based on the totality of the circumstances, Your Honors, we would submit that the first interrogation was clearly custodial, and the district court erred and should have found, as a matter of law, that this interrogation was custodial. But before moving on to the issue of the second statement, I think it's important to note that in reviewing Agent Ely's testimony regarding his investigation of this case, it appears that the agents interrogating the defendant didn't even have enough evidence before they interrogated him to even make an arrest. That what this shows is just how important this statement was that they elicited from him. In fact, it was so important that the agents had the defendant reduce his statement to writing and sign it, this un-Mirandized statement. And I would reemphasize that it's undisputed that the agents in the first interrogation did not read the defendant his Miranda warnings and did not admonish him of his right to remain silent, his right to counsel. Furthermore, and just again emphasizing the importance of this statement, the defendant in this case never would have entered a plea of guilty if the district court had not denied his motion to suppress statements. It was clearly material, and he believes, and we believe, that the government would have a much more difficult time meeting its burden of proof in this case if it were not for the fact that these statements were admitted. With respect to the second statement, which took place in the early morning hours, as we've already noted, in the early morning hours of the following day, it's debatable whether the district court even analyze the second statement in light of the first statement being custodial. But to the extent that it did, we believe the district court got it wrong and that the statement should have been suppressed because the defendant was subjected to an unlawful two-step interrogation process deliberately used to circumvent the defendant's rights under Miranda as set forth by the Supreme Court in Missouri v. Seibert. So for these reasons and the reasons set forth in our brief, we respectfully request that this court reverse the district court's denial of the defendant's motion to suppress.
Thank you. Mr. Lango. Ms. Perry.
Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. The September 22, 2000 interview was simply not custodial. First of all, to start out with the point that appellant made, the district court specifically found that the agents did not instruct Thompson to remain in his home. They did not credit Mr. Thompson. The district court did not credit Mr. Thompson's testimony on this point, and instead credited the testimony of the two agents that they did not say any such thing when they left. And then, in fact, they did leave and left him home for about 8 or 9 hours, during which time Mr. Thompson talked to his sister 2 times, went to sleep, eventually got up, and as Judge Bauer noted, then decided to get dressed to go for a jog and tried to leave the house. With respect to the first interview, it was not custodial. The district court specifically found there was no intimidation, there was no force, there was no display of weapons, and in fact, there was no reference to weapons made at all, although Thompson did testify to the contrary. The district court did not believe Thompson's testimony on this point either. Similarly, there was no physical contact, there were no promises made to the defendant, and the interview did take place in the defendant's own home at the defendant's invitation. For that reason, that first interview was not custodial and no Miranda warnings needed to be given. With respect to the second interview, the government first believes that because the first interview was not custodial, that Missouri versus Siebert does not apply in this case at all. But even if it were to apply, there was at least 8 hours in between the two interviews. In between, as I already stated, the defendant was in his own home in his own surroundings. The defendant did not know that the agents were surveilling his home. And then finally, after 8 or 9 hours, the defendant was arrested, taken to a different location, and the interview was conducted by different agents who knew nothing about the previous confession the night before and knew very limited facts about the actual case. For that reason, even if Siebert did apply, this interview was not two spates of integrated and proximately conducted questioning. For these reasons, if there are no questions from the panel, the government would ask that the district court's conviction and sentence be affirmed in this case.
Thank you, Ms. Berry.
Thank you.
Longo?
There's no time left.
In a minute. Oh, well, I've been informed you're out of time, but you may you may have a minute.
Just with respect to the Siebert issue, I would point out that the strongest piece of evidence showing that the FBI was using this second interrogation as a means to get around the use of a Miranda warning in the first interrogation would be the fact that they got a written statement from the defendant in the first interrogation. If they had a written statement already, why bother getting a second statement? And the answer to me seems clear, which is that they knew they had made a mistake in the first statement by not reading the defendant his Miranda rights because his first statement was elicited as a result of a clearly custodial interrogation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Longo. Thanks to both counsel. Mr. Longo, I want to extend the additional thanks to the court for you and your firm accepting this appointment and ably representing Mr. Thompson.
Indeed. I join them.
Case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed.